Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, June 28th. This is the weekend, or the Monday before the 4th of July holiday. I should put up a quick note that we're not going to have a program next Monday, the 5th. I think most everybody's going to be celebrating the 4th of July, our independence. And I want to say a special welcome to so many of our listeners today. We have our regular listeners, but also, as a result of one of our special guests, we've got a host, I mean hundreds of credit unions calling in to be a part of the program today. And we want to welcome all of you to listen to the program. Also, a special thank you goes out to Alice Alvey, who sat in the hot seat last week and played host for me while I was with my dad. Unfortunately, his health is slipping. He's 87 years old, and I wanted to spend Father's Day with him, and it was great. I appreciate you, Alice, for doing that. Thank you so much. We have as guests today two very important guests. I'm very excited about it. We've got Alan Barr of CMG Mortgage Insurance. I'll do a much bigger introduction of Alan in just a little bit as we get into the program. But also, towards the end of the program, we have Glenn Corso coming on and giving us a very important update about what's going on with the financial reform bill. So we'll be stay tuned all the way through this program. We've got an action-packed program. But as we do, one of the most important parts. I want to say a special word of thank you to PMI Mortgage Insurance, who is, by the way, the parent company for CMG Mortgage Insurance. Big welcome to them and their audience. We thank you so much for being a sponsor. Also to Rob Katz and our friends at Del Mar Data Track, also one of our sponsors of the radio program. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, please contact me. We look forward to talking to you. But let's get into the most important reason for why so many of you dial in each week and listen to us, and that is to go through all the hot items going on in the industry. Joe Farr of MBS Quoteline, welcome to the program as you so faithfully do each and every week. Bring us an update on what's going on with interest rates, Joe.
Hi, Dave. Well, it was a good report. We've fallen to the lowest rates in decades. I mean, it's really quite phenomenal. The prices just keep getting better on MBS, and mortgage rates keep going lower. Yeah, I look back over the last few days, and I've seen that there have been 8 positive days and 3 negative days for mortgage-backed security prices and therefore mortgage rates. And the market has been volatile, but fortunately the volatility has been a net benefit. We're about a point lower in price, a point higher in price than we were this time last week. And it's just been phenomenal. We've seen the run. Now, the downside is that the run seems to be a run away from some of the more traditional investments and or those that are kind of based on risk. We've seen, the demand for bonds has really been a result of concern over economic growth and at the same time, very, very low inflation. So the only thing that came out today, we're up 13/32 today. That's good, and somewhat related to a very benign inflation indicator. The core PCE came out at an annual rate of 1.3%, which is very much, in fact, below what the Fed's sort of target goal is, and a little higher than what core CPI was a couple of weeks ago, but still a very favorable inflation level.
Well, last week we had some, like you said, a lot of volatility. Net effect was good. Run through
net
last week.
Been very good. Yeah, last week, most of that was driven by this sense of concern over global growth and just a shift in sentiment away from stocks. We lost about 300 points on the Dow and into safer government-guaranteed mortgage-backed securities. Economic data last week was fairly weak, which kind of helped put the economic recovery, put doubt in the economic recovery in the U.S. Housing data came out last week. Existing home sales were not as good as expected, and worse than slightly lower than April. New home sales were awful in May.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing, they were down like 33% from April, whereas existing home sales were down 2%. And that's largely due to what's being measured. New home sales measures contracts signed for some reason. They call it new home sales, but they're measuring contracts signed. And with the end of the home buyer tax credit contract deadline of April 30th, it only makes sense that there'd been a rush to get contracts signed in April that either would have ordinarily been in May or might not have occurred at all. But that's a big reason for that huge decline. And by contrast, existing home sales are a measure of actual closing. So they were still prompted by some of those contracts that were signed prior to April 30th, and we'll probably have more of that in June. But you know, it's odd to see one so bad and one so not so bad, but that's a big reason for it. Dave, this week we have the jobs report coming out on Friday. Everyone should pay attention. It could be, usually is, a market moving event. This month we're expecting a measure for their measuring activity. This will be activity in June. The consensus is for 100,000 jobs lost. You might remember last month for May activity, the number of jobs created was like 431,000 jobs was what was reported. But you'll remember that that was almost all, 411 of the 431,000 were census workers being hired. And some of what's going out in this month's jobs report is that some of those census workers' jobs have run their course and they'll be leaving the marketplace. But that's the big thing on Friday. Got some manufacturing information coming out on Wednesday and Thursday, and the pending home sales number comes out on Thursday as well. So jobs report, big number on Friday.
It's also interesting to note, I'm seeing the headline today. In fact, one of my good friends, Jody Shen, who's a reporter at Bloomberg, was reporting how there's insane prices going on for the current mortgage bonds out there. And just as the supply of mortgage bonds dwindles some, the ones that are out there seem to be getting some record pricing as well. Record lower interest rates, Joe. Wow, this is exciting. I wonder if we're going to see ourselves another exciting day, exciting time, exciting season. Based on the economy, we may even see a bit of a refinance boom. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, you know, that's what that article, I think, if I saw the same one, is kind of referring to, because there's big premiums being paid for higher coupon mortgage-backed securities, and that ordinarily doesn't happen because of the fear that loans will refinance. And, you know, with prices being where they are, there's far less concern about paying the big premiums because there are far fewer people that can actually refinance. Now, it's not too good for the industry because we'd love for them to all come through the process again, but, you know, so many of them aren't going to be able to. So there still should be a pickup, but not the kind of pickup we've seen in years past when we got to, you know, decades low rates, but still a good time.
Good times ahead. Thank you so much. And any one of you that are out there listening that want to know what MBS Quote Line is, stay tuned for this word. It's a great service. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, and we're very honored to have as our guests again for this week, Alan Barr of CMG Mortgage Insurance, and Glenn Corso later in the program giving us an update about the financial reform bill. And as we do each and every week right after the interest rates, we talk about what's going on in the legislative world. I mean, there's enough to follow, Alice, what's happening on the national scene, and now we're starting to see things develop on the state front. Alice Alvey, President of Mortgage Youth, thank you so much for bringing us an update. It's your show.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's crazy out there right now. We're absolutely watching the financial reform legislation. As Dave mentioned, Glenn Corso will be on the show later on, so you'll definitely want to listen to that segment as well. So now the bill is now known as the Dodd-Frank bill. It has gone through some committee workouts, and here's what we know so far. The risk retention of 5% is in the bill with that there's an exemption for qualified residential mortgages. Now, it goes on to describe that, again, this is going to apply for any asset-backed security. So if the entity, the bank, lender, is creating an asset-backed security, there's a 5% risk retention on the surface. But then as you start drilling down into the law, there are several exemptions, and they talk about qualified mortgages and even giving leeway for the federal agencies and the SEC to be able to make up in the future even more underwriting or risk retention exemptions for lesser percentages, developing underwriting standards. But immediately in the bill right now, we do have that it does look like it would be something that is standard qualifying ratios, your typical Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac products, FHA, VA. Even though none of that is explicit, like has been talked about in the past, there is plenty of room in there for them to give us a qualified mortgage exemption for not having to retain 5% of the risk. So when we get Glenn on the show, we'll be running lots of questions by him about that. Then another part. So that actually, I want to just circle back. That's Title 9 in the bill, for those of you who like to read the real thing. Then Title 14 of this bill has the prohibition of steering that we've been watching. So this is the piece that talks about you cannot pay an originator directly or indirectly compensation that varies based on the terms of the loan. That sentence has been in there since we first started talking about this a while ago. It is still in there, so that's going to be, looks like in this final version, a done deal. Then the board goes on to say, or the law goes on to say, that the board is going to have to prescribe regulations that prohibit originators from steering. And this gets into some convolution about restructuring the financing of the origination fee. It talks about different characteristics that a loan officer would have to prescribe to. And one of them that jumps out is me. You know, a lot of them we're following. You know, make sure the customer has the ability to repay. No predatory characteristics, but it does say that if the loan officer is unable to suggest an affordable product, it would prohibit the originator from discouraging a consumer from seeking a mortgage from another originator. So now they're regulating every sentence that we can say, Dave, this is getting hard.
It is amazing.
Yeah, there's lots of little nooks and crannies in this one. So anyway, unfair practices are going to be monitored. The restructuring of the origination fee is another tricky one. I know we're going to spend time talking about that with Glenn as well. An originator may only receive an origination fee from the consumer unless there's no other, you know, so it's either get an origination fee from the consumer and you're not getting any points or you're not getting yield, or you're not getting anything from the consumer and then directly from the consumer, and then you can charge or receive, you know, a yield on it. So this is complicated and it's missing some detail in the law. So we'll talk about that in more detail with Glenn when he gets on the show. Another piece, I know many of you are anxiously wondering about the home buyer tax credit. There has been a new version of the Senate bill introduced on, last Thursday. So where the previous version we talked about last week, that didn't pass. You probably heard that on the radio during the week. It's a huge budget bill. They're trying to extend unemployment benefits and our little home buyer tax credit, you know, just let us close the contracts that are already out there. That has not been extended yet. We got one day to go. The Senate's created a new bill, but the previous bill was $118 billion in money. This one's about $103 billion. So there's a little cost savings, but we're not sure if it's enough to get it to pass. So we're all just crossing our fingers on that one.
Well, there's so much to go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, those are the two big ones we're watching right now for you.
Yeah, well, that's so important. I tell you, it's really interesting. We sit and look at, for our industry, we want to see these the extension of the home buyer tax credit, but we understand that so many are so against us just continuing to fuel our debt situations. There's a lot of concern. Alice, thank you so much for being bringing this to us each and every week. Folks, stay tuned. We've got Alan Barr of CMG Mortgage Insurance, and Glenn Corso, the Community Mortgage Banking Project, with us a little bit later in the program. Thank you so much. Stay tuned right after this. And next, we're going to have the Profit Doctor.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Every week, folks, we bring you important topics to your industry and to your business. There's nothing more important than what's going on with your bottom line. And so now we have our Profit Doctor with us, Andy Schell. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be on the show today, and it's awesome that we're having a credit union focus today. You know, I think you know this, Dave, but I spent the first 20 years of my career in regulated depositories and mortgage lending. So the credit union group is near and dear to my heart. And the thing I want to talk about is there's several different ways to measure success between credit unions and mortgage banks, and that's one of the things I wanted to get into.
Well, what is the difference? Let's get into that a little bit, Andy. What is the difference between them? Give our listeners that are maybe not as familiar with that a little color on that.
Well, if you think about a mortgage bank, one of the key ways of measuring success of a mortgage bank is we look at the profit on closed loans. And we do that in a number of different ways. We look at usually profit before tax on volume of loans closed within a given period of time, usually within a month. And we see our clients running in basis points. Mortgage bankers always talk in basis points, 20 basis points to 70 basis points to 100 basis points in pre-tax profit on volumes of loans closed.
That's right.
And that's how mortgage bankers think about it. Now, on the depository side, depositories usually look at a measure of success as profit on assets or return on assets. They call it ROA, return on assets. And for a bank, 1%, 1.25%, 1.5% is a good measure. So mortgage banks don't look at return on assets because the goal of a mortgage bank is to sell the asset as quickly as possible. In mortgage banking, it's all about velocity, getting the loans in and out as quickly as possible profitably. So I think the most important measure for a mortgage bank to look at is return on investment, because somebody invested money into the mortgage bank to create it, to create the capital that's then leveraged to create the mortgage banking operation. And that measure of ROI, their ROI on the operation of a mortgage bank, can be measured, and it's like you can compare it to the stock market or compare it to any other investment. And for mortgage banks, we see ROI of 25%, 55%, even up to 70 or 80%, it can be very, very large. So if a depository, if a credit union decides to expand or get into mortgage banking, if they put $1 million into the mortgage bank, they should expect to get $300,000. 30% return is possible on that kind of investment. So, you know, that's a pretty good return, 30% return. But to get that kind of return, you've got to have a well-run mortgage bank.
All right, Profit Doctor, you know, there's a few out there that hear those numbers and they're not running quite at that same level. So what, you know, how do you tell if a mortgage banking company or a mortgage department, in the case of these banks and credit unions, is running well and is healthy?
Well, you know, there's standards to measure results. And one of the ways that people measure results is they look at their financial statements, P&L, balance sheet, and all that. Well, I would contend that that's just scraping the surface. That's really not enough to drill deep. You need to look at reports daily. You know, if you're running a mortgage bank, really what matters is if you make a loan, you better make sure that loan gets purchased. So you need to look at the report that comes from the investors that says, if you'll give me this piece of paper, I'll buy your loan. And they call it the STIP list or the STIP report. If you're running a mortgage bank, looking at that STIP report is really important. Daily locks, weekly being a part of the pricing strategy, looking at the volume and number of units of loans closed and locked, and then every month the loans that are closed and locked and the loans in process, and look at how many of your loans got declined, what's your decline rate, and what's your cross-sell rate, how many of your customers that came in opened up a checking account. And then you got to look at revenue and all costs to get profit. And you want to know profit by originator, by branch, by loan. You really got to know profit by loan and profit by originator. So you start by measuring that. Then you've got to push through efficiencies. You've got to make sure your operation is running really, really smoothly. So you've got to look at your metrics, your efficiency metrics, loans per processor, loans per underwriter, number of loans per originator. You know, how many loans is each person working on? Loans per employee is really an important measure. Then you want to look at how long it takes a loan to get through the cycle. Once it's closed, you want to get that thing sold.
That is huge. That is huge. And Andy and Mr. Doctor, Profit Doctor, if you do have a well-run mortgage banking department or mortgage department, how can you grow it?
Oh, man, Dave, we've talked about this, and it is an amazing time to grow your business. There are mortgage banks and mortgage brokers out there that would love to be part of a depository, because as a depository, you've got lots of cash, and you've got lots of stability, and you've got the ability to penetrate the market. And so it's important for the banks out there, the credit unions, the depositories, as they add branches, to remember a couple of really key things. Mortgage banks are like a loan factory that manufactures a loan and then sells the loan.
That's right.
And then a mortgage broker is like a factory rep. A mortgage broker takes the order and then submits the file to a loan factory that manufactures and sells it. So I bring that up just because we had we knew of one depository that was looking to buy a mortgage company. So they went out and got in touch with the realtors to find the best mortgage company and got a hold of the mortgage company and getting ready to buy the mortgage company. But they forgot to ask them if they were a mortgage banker or a mortgage broker. These guys wanted a full-function mortgage bank that could close a loan and sell a loan, and they were talking to a mortgage broker. Now, mortgage brokers make great branches, but you got to make sure you already have a full-functioning mortgage banking platform in place first.
That is such a good point. Okay, we got to wrap up the Profit Doctor segment, but what is most important there, Profit Doctor? What should we be focusing on?
Well, it's reports and metrics and benchmarks. You got to be efficient, effective, and economic. You got to have the right people doing the right things at the right time. People that have listened to the Profit Doctor have heard me say that over and over. And you got to think about this. If you've seen the movie Any Given Sunday, the football movie, it's a great football movie, Al Pacino in there. He's
great
in the locker room giving a speech to his players, and he goes, you got to leave it all on the field. 100% of the effort, 100% of the time. Success in mortgage bank is leaving it all on the field every day.
That's a good point. Profit Doctor, thank you so much, Andy, for being with us. We look forward to getting more updates. Folks, we'll be right back after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and it's a great privilege to have so many credit unions listening in to this topic today that we have. And we're very fortunate to have an Alan Barr, who is Director of Secondary Markets and National Accounts for CMG Mortgage Insurance. His primary responsibility there is to assist credit unions in assessing the secondary market resources and capital. I'm sure the risk of components in there as well. He joined CMG in mortgage insurance about 14 years fairly recent, if I'm not mistaken on that, but you've got 14 years of mortgage capital markets experience on the Wall Street with Drexel, Burnham, Lambert, and Solomon Brothers. My goodness, the list goes on and on. Alan, welcome to the program. We're so glad to have you here with us. I understand that credit unions have been making great gains in mortgage lending. Can you tell us what accounts for this?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I appreciate being on. You know, if you go back historically and look at mortgage market share data and look specifically at what credit unions have done, up until 2007, their share of the market has been about 2%, and it didn't change much from year to year and quarter to quarter. But things changed in 2007, and as we all know, that's when we started to see the first cracks appear in the mortgage marketplace. And, you know, we had investors leaving, retreating. We had mortgage bankers going out of business. And credit unions stepped up. In a way, they're our unsung heroes. And, they deserve our kudos. Their market share has, in some quarters over the last couple of years, been in excess of 6.5%. And because they are depository institutions and they have, their own sources of liquidity, they put that to work and offered loans to their members and replaced some of the liquidity that had gone out of the marketplace.
So did hi, this is Alice, Alan, and welcome
to
the
show.
Hi, Alice. I just wanted to ask you, so did the additional mortgage loans that were originated by the credit unions, did you find that they had to take more risk? Were they filling the subprime void as this transition was occurring?
No, absolutely not. In fact, even in subprime's heyday, credit unions did not originate that kind of product. And they also didn't get involved in Alt-A or payment option arms. They've always been very prudent, and they focused on what was best for the member. And, their worldview was that it never made sense to put a member into a loan that was going to result in a foreclosure. So they've always focused on very prudent lending and sustainable home ownership, and I don't imagine that's ever going to change in the near future. They continue to originate very good quality loans that perform very well.
Well, Alan, this is Joe. How big can they be? How big a player can they get to be? Are they constrained in any way, or is there concern about how much liquidity they do have?
That's a great question, Joe. The fact is, today they have far more liquidity than I've seen in recent history, anyway. And that's due to a couple of reasons. One, credit union members have really stepped up and put a lot of their excess cash into credit union deposits. And from anecdotal evidence, what we understand is a lot of them said, we don't want to put our excess cash into mutual funds and other assets that have had poor and sometimes even negative returns. We'll put them into deposits at our credit union. So credit unions have been beneficiaries of a flight to quality in that perspective. But they've also done the very prudent thing and tried to avoid putting a lot of fixed-rate, long-dated loans on their balance sheet and incur interest rate as a result. So they've actually stepped up their selling of loans into the secondary market. And we see that as a very prudent thing. So at this point, they're extremely liquid, and we don't see liquidity as a limiting factor for them.
Well, you mentioned credit loan quality a little bit earlier, and we have quite a few customers that are credit unions. We've worked a lot with the credit unions and, of course, CMG in the past. You guys do a great job. And they, I know for the credit unions we've dealt with, it does seem like their defaults are a little more, a little more under control. They're not seeing the same thing as some of the larger entities. Is that true across the board?
That is absolutely true, Allison. In fact, if you were an outsider looking at credit union loan performance versus the rest of the market, you'd almost think that you were looking at, apples to oranges. The difference is so overwhelming. Whereas, you know, for a bank or some other institution, the performance that they see in their mortgage, even prime mortgage origination, you know, may represent delinquencies in the low teens and much higher for subprime and Alt-A. The overall delinquency rate for credit union mortgage loans is just over 2%. You know, so and that's up from where they used to be. So, you know, it's accelerated a bit, but still it's a very enviable position compared to what we see in the rest of the marketplace.
So, Alan, what do you attribute that to if it's the same kind of loans?
You know, it's a very interesting answer to that question. You know, first of all, credit unions didn't get involved in some of the problematic loan programs, and that's part of it. But it doesn't explain all of the reason. Actuaries have actually looked at the performance of credit union loans versus, you know, loans originated by others, and they found that there is a superiority factor that can't be explained by, you know, underwriting guidelines or programs or geography or any of the other kind of risk factors that you would use to look at risk in a loan profile. And what we think it is, and this is only speculation on our part, but, you know, we think that credit unions, in part, they know their members. You know, they're members, after all, of the enterprise, mm-hmm. and they know them, and so that reduces the risk to some extent. But also the members themselves, they feel like they're part of a, you know, society. It's an affinity-oriented organization, and they feel a stronger obligation to make due on their payments than, you know, say, the typical borrower.
I think that is such an important point is, you know, I've worked a lot with credit unions. In fact, one of the companies that moved me out here from the Southern California out to the Austin, Texas had a huge customer base of credit unions, and I'd love to have you really focus on that. Why do you think credit union members feel that way, Alan?
You know, it's a tough question to answer, but you know, there if you've sat in meetings with credit union management, you know that there is a difference.
Yeah, that's so
you
true.
Know, they differ quite a bit from, say, a bank. You know, a bank, they're beholden to shareholders. And what do shareholders want? They want quarterly profitability. A credit union doesn't have shareholders. They report to members. And behind closed doors, all they're about is, you know, what do I do to better service my members? And the members feel that, and, you know, they feel an obligation. They feel like they're part of a society, you know, they perform. That's I know it sounds Pollyanna, but
you know,
it's true.
You have to understand the culture of the credit union to really understand that thoroughly. And it is so true. It's such a great point. We're going to be right back after this brief word.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Good to have you back, everybody. This is Dave Lick with Lickin' on Lending and with our special guest, Alan Barr of CMG Mortgage Insurance. And, Alan, I think it's one point I'm going to do a little bit of a break here so you could explain the relationship between PMI and CMG. Can you give us just a quick thing, and then I want to get back into the discussion about members and how that's unique. So explain CMG Mortgage Insurance and PMI and the relationship there.
Sure. PMI is a part is a shareholder in CMGMI. We have two parents, PMI, who provides all of the back office support, underwriting, and that sort of thing, the operations of CMG Mortgage Insurance. And then our other parent is CUNA Mutual Group, which is a financial services firm that caters to the credit union industry. And so we service only credit unions and are unique in that respect.
Well, I think what Alice said earlier in her firm, Mortgage U, works with a number of your customers and with your company, and we just hear really good things about that, and we're so thrilled to have PMI as a sponsor of this real program. Let's go back to the discussion about members and what is unique to credit unions. It seems to say a lot about the credit union customer relationship. Alan, could you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the first things that I learned when I started this job was to never refer to a credit union member as a customer. A customer, you can afford to lose if they don't make you money. And credit union members are more than customers. They are they are an integral part of the society of the group, and they're treated as such. They're almost treated like family. So it's a great relationship.
I think it is so important, and I think we've heard the number of credit unions declining. Is this a big concern for the movement?
Actually, you know what? It's not. Today we have about 7,500 credit unions in the U.S., and we tend to lose about one a day. But what we tend to see is that the smaller credit unions are getting absorbed or merging with some of the larger ones. And when that happens, it gives the smaller credit union a bigger platform, more products to offer. And particularly from a mortgage perspective, mortgages can be pretty complicated. So it offers them the platform and resources to be able to offer that product to their members. And so, we think it's actually it's arguably a positive to see that kind of consolidation. And the other thing that I would mention is that even though the numbers of credit unions are declining, membership is up. Today we have about 91 million credit union members, and
wow,
that growth is actually faster than the overall U.S. population growth. So, I think that's the better metric to focus on.
Well, that's a very impressive number. So, I know we work a lot with the credit union service organizations, the CUSOs, and so the smaller credit unions, are they finding that they want to ramp up to be in mortgages, or is it easier for them to just become involved with a wholesale relationship and the CUSO side? How do you see that side of the market evolving?
Well, one of the things that we've seen is that the number of credit unions that are funding in their own names are increasing pretty significantly. There are options for some of the smaller credit unions that, that don't want to be funding in their own name, and a lot of them enter into wholesale relationships. And as you mentioned, a lot of those wholesale relationships are formed through credit union service organizations, or CUSOs, where maybe one or more credit union would band together and form an entity that would do the mortgage lending for them, so that they can kind of consolidate resources and create a platform. But we're seeing more and more credit unions considering mortgage lending as a core product and really focusing on doing more of the business. We see a lot of credit unions that were doing wholesale a year ago doing correspondent lending today, and a lot that were, selling on a best efforts basis last year, selling mandatory today. So, there's a lot of movement going on and a lot of increased expertise occurring within credit unions.
Well, hey, Alan, this is Andy Schell. Welcome to the show. It's great to hear this conversation about credit unions. CUSO is a very complicated issue. We're actually working with some credit unions on that point. And as you see credit unions grow, what are some of the primary challenges you see that they are facing?
As problems go, having too much liquidity is probably a better problem than its alternative. But, you know, right now, credit unions are incredibly liquid, and they're, you know, looking for places to loan that money out. They can't always put it into a lot of fixed rate 30-year mortgages because, you know, then they have interest rate risk. So it's always a bit of a juggle for them, trying to use their excess liquidity in the best way. So that seems to be the biggest challenge for them today.
As it relates to the mortgage lending specifically, are there significant challenges to the credit unions?
You know, Dave, I think one of the challenges from a mortgage perspective is one around perception. I talk to a lot of credit union managers, and they say, you know, I wish I had a dollar for every time a member said, you know, I didn't know you did mortgages.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And if that's true for the membership, you know, that's especially true for realtors out there, for example. And today in this environment where we're shifting from a refi market to a purchase market, that perception becomes a problem. But a lot of credit unions are, engaging in outreach programs to talk with realtors and let them know that, you know, they have this wonderful product and they do it very well.
Well, it's really encouraging to see that, and I think it's so important that people everywhere have an awareness out there, credit unions out there, and they're playing a bigger and more increased role. And as Andy mentioned, I mean, we're working with a number of them that are actually acquiring mortgage banking companies and then also doing kind of setting up some production relationships. For our listeners, how might they be able to gain more information regarding credit unions, Alan?
Well, let me refer you to some websites. The regulatory body that actually, you know, looks after credit unions is the NCUA, the National Credit Union Administration, and they have a website at www.ncua.gov. There's also an industry association, CUNA, which stands for the Credit Union National Association, and they have CUNA.org, which is a great source of information. And I would also refer people to our own website at cmgmi.com. We have a lot of information there that I think would be of interest to your listeners.
Well, we appreciate you, Alan, so much for being a part of the program. Folks, we've had Alan Barr, who is the Director of Secondary Markets and a National Accounts for CMG Mortgage Insurance Company. And we just really appreciate you, Alan, being on the program. We welcome so many of the credit unions that are dialed in and listening in, and we encourage you to come back and listen to us each week as we talk about the hot topic about mortgage lending and all that's going on. Again, that's our sole purpose of this program. It's a free service to you, and with so many blogs to read and so much information in the industry, how do you digest it all? Well, here's a place where you can come listen for an hour each week and get a good understanding of what's critically going on. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Schrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Schrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Schrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Schrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Schrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Schrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln, and I'll tell you, there have been some significant developments going on with the old Senate Bill 3217, and I think that's the number. I've forgotten them now, but it's now the Dodd, whatever amendment it is. We're going to get into that just now. I try to listen to all this with Alice, but Alice, I try
Dodd
to keep track.
Frank Bill.
Dodd-Frank Bill. That sounds like a bad something you'd find in a New York street corner, one of those vendors selling something here. But this is serious, folks. We got some big, complicated aspects about this. And I'm sure a lot more is going to be discovered, but as we have back, and as no stranger to this program, is Glenn Corso. He was the former senior vice president with the PMI Group, and Glenn has over 33 years of mortgage banking experience, specializing in government relationships and public policy. He is the co-founder, or actually a founder with two other gentlemen, the Community Mortgage Banking Project, which is an advocacy organization representing independent mortgage bankers, into mortgage brokers, in community lenders. Even I think we should get you some credit unions, Glenn, into the mix of what you're doing. But hey, welcome to the program. We got a lot to talk about. Good to have you
here. Thanks, Dave. Thank you.
Well, give us an update. And Alice, please jump in here. I'm traveling and being distracted with family matters is kind of, I'm trying to stay up on this, but you're going to have to help me out, Alice, with all that's going on. Glenn, what is the so significant of what's just happened, and where is this at?
Well, as you mentioned, the Dodd-Frank bill, soon to be the Dodd-Frank Act, is passed the House and the Senate. The House and Senate have had a conference. That conference finished very early last Friday morning, and they produced a report over the weekend that we expect is going to be considered by the House and then the Senate, respectively, and passed and enacted into law and sent to President Obama. So within less than a week, we think this thing is going to be official. And it contains lots of mortgage provisions. And a couple of the highlights are, number one, on risk retention. There is going to be a risk retention requirement, but there is an exemption for all federal government guaranteed or insured mortgage securities, and there is an exemption for qualified mortgages, which, as it turns out, will now be conventional mortgages, because with the government exemption, all FHA, VA, and Rural Housing Service mortgages are out from under risk retention. So there is a qualified mortgage retention for well underwritten, soundly documented conventional mortgages as well.
Hey Glenn, do you know who it is in the production chain that's going to have to retain that risk?
It'll have
Great
to
question.
Be that's right. And there's two answers to that. The first is that in the production chain, the originator that closes and funds the loan will have the retention requirement on them. But then in addition, the securitizer has a retention requirement. So for instance, Joe, if it's a 5% requirement, which is generally what the bill calls for, there will have to be a regulation to say how that 5% gets divvied up between the originator that closes and funds the loan and the securitizer.
So it's not cumulative. It's not each five.
Fortunately not. It's not cumulative, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say very quickly, your listeners, I'm sure, are probably very well aware that there are provisions in there on loan officer and broker compensation, and those provisions are very similar to what the Federal Reserve Board proposed last fall. The compensation paid to a loan officer or broker cannot vary according to the terms of the loan except for the principal balance. Excuse me. So, and those regulations will probably go into effect, I'd say, about 18 to 20 months from now.
Yeah, that's a key degree of comfort anyway, that it's not going to change how they get paid next month.
That's right. That's right. Fortunately, there'll be a long lead time. The flip side of that is that the new consumer regulator will be in charge of those regulations, So they'll have, I would say, more of a consumer than an industry orientation. That's number one. And number two, the reason for the long period is because the law provides for a transition period to set up the new consumer agency, and then for that new consumer agency to start issuing its draft regulations and then its final regulations. So that 18 to 20 months is an estimate based on the various time periods in the law.
Hey, Glenn, could you talk a little bit about the origination, the financing of the origination fee and the provisions in there? Because, boy, when you try and read that in a sentence, you can't say that out loud to people on the radio because it makes no sense when you just say it. So
yeah.
Can you explain that in layman's terms for folks, the origination fee impact?
Sure. So, Alice, the origination fee impact is all tied up in changes to Truth in Lending. And there are changes in law to Truth in Lending. Truth in Lending is going to be one of the laws that is now handled or managed by the new consumer regulator. So, again, it'll be subject to all those transition periods and everything. And what the changes say is this. Every loan that's originated in this country will have to, the lender will have to demonstrate that they have subjected the borrower to an ability to pay test, which means really that they've ascertained that based on the consumer's income and their assets and job stability, things like that, that the lender has good reason to believe that the consumer will be able to repay the loan that they're taking out. The law further provides that the lender can gain a presumption that they complied with that ability to pay test if they originate a mortgage that has certain features. And essentially those features are no balloon loans, no negative amortization, if it's an ARM, that there's caps, annual and lifetime caps on the interest rate, that they've fully documented the borrower's income and assets, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The law then goes on to say, in addition, there are restrictions on the fees and points that can be charged and on discount points. So you can charge 3 points under this qualified mortgage test, and then in addition, you can charge 2 bona fide discount points. However, where it gets really confusing, and what you were referring to, Alice, is the provision that says either the borrower can pay that out of pocket or can be financed as part of the loan, but they can't do part and part. In other words, they can't finance part and they can't pay part out of their pocket. That's the way the law reads. It's kind of crazy, but that's the way it reads.
That is really interesting. Let me ask you this question, Glenn. I've got a couple text messages
sure.
that came into me that said, you know, how much of this is the qualified is tied to Fannie and Freddie? What happens if Fannie and Freddie were to go away? How does that impact how this bill is worded?
Well,
or this act?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is, Dave, is that if you read through this, there are certainly references to Fannie and Freddie in there and to the Fannie-Freddie regulator, you know, FHFA. But if Fannie and Freddie went away tomorrow, wouldn't change anything in this law.
Interesting.
They deliberately wrote this law so that they were very free to do whatever they decided to do to Fannie and Freddie probably next year.
Wow. That is really interesting, and I wonder if that doesn't give us some indication that we're going to see the whole Fannie and Freddie issue addressed here.
Hey, Glenn, I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you about, since we have such a big credit
sure.
union audience, you know, there's no exemption for credit unions in all of this. Is that correct? I mean, obviously, they're not necessarily creating a security in the 5% risk retention, but the loan officer compensation issue and all of the steering provisions apply to everyone.
That's right. They apply across the board whether or not you're subject to the SAFE Act or not.
Okay.
So it's not tied to the SAFE Act at all. And so that would mean credit unions, banks, bank subsidiaries, all the folks who are not subject to the SAFE Act, this applies, as you said, Alice, across the board to every company that originates residential loans.
Hey, Glenn, you mentioned 18 to 20 months before the risk retention component was, the loan officer compensation component was applicable. How about risk retention, and is there anything in this bill that could impact people very soon?
I don't think there's anything. Yeah, I know. I hesitated for a moment because I wanted to run through my mind. Joe, I don't think there's anything in this bill that can affect people within the next few months. And the other provisions that you were asking about are all in that same general time frame because, again, the new consumer regulator has got to take over, and so there's a transition provided for that, and then they're given time to get their regulations out as well.
Okay.
Okay, let's go through the time frames of what we have. We're going to get a lot, trying to get a lot accomplished. I mean, they're trying to get a lot accomplished. This whole thing done, is it realistic they could get it done even this week, do you think?
Well, interestingly enough, the thing that may complicate it a bit is the unfortunate death of Senator Robert Byrd from West Virginia.
Oh, yes, that's hot news today. Yep.
Yeah, he passed away early this morning, a longtime veteran in the Senate since 1958. His funeral, we're assuming, is going to be probably sometime toward the end of this week or something like that. So depending on when the funeral is held, the Senate will undoubtedly take some time off to allow the senators to go and attend the funeral. And so this bill was prepared over the weekend, so I think they're going to get it done in the first part of this week. But the timing of the Byrd funeral may affect some other legislation that people in the mortgage industry are interested in.
That being the home buyer tax credit? Yeah.
Yes, the extension of the closing date for the loans under the home buyer tax credit. There was a slim possibility that was going to get done before the 30th anyway, and frankly, I think that possibility is pretty well at the vanishing point.
Still a good chance of it being extended, though, just not until after June 30th?
Yeah, Joe. I think there is a pretty decent chance of that because, frankly, there was no controversy about extending it. The controversy was over the particular bill that it got tied to, and so I think it will be extended. Question is how many deals blow up because the tax credit deadline isn't extended beyond the 30th. That I don't know. Hopefully, people will keep calm and perhaps delay closings for a few days because I really do think it'll get done.
Yeah, that's encouraging for many of our listeners to be hearing. Well, we just got 2 minutes left before we got to run out of here and with our program. Glenn, thank you so much for being part of this. By the time we return to the air again, which will be July 12th, we're taking the 5th off because of the observance of Independence Day. But by the 12th, all of this will have sorted itself out. We should know what's passed if it's all happened. It seems like it's inevitable. And then we're going to have a chance, if Senator Byrd's funeral does delay things, it's going to give us a chance to look a little deeper into what's in that. So I think that might be a blessing in disguise. But would you be available to come on and possibly on the 12th be a big part of the program? Nothing like standing you alive. I mean, an introduction right here on radio live.
How could I turn down an offer like that, Dave? How could I? Of course, I'll be available.
We love it. Appreciate you so much. Folks, we thank you so much for tuning in and listening, being a part of the program each and every week. We're here to begin or try to digest all that's going on, begin to understand what's going on, and we're thrilled that you're here. Folks, we encourage you to pass this around to everyone that you know in your network and let them know that this program's here as a great service of providing up-to-the-minute mortgage information, what's happening, what's hot, what's going on the rates. We appreciate you. Again, as always, we thank our guest, Alan Barr of CMG Mortgage Insurance, for being with us. And Glenn Corso, thank you so much on such short notice coming on and being with us. And we look forward to hearing much more from you on July 12th. Everyone stay tuned for that program. Have a great 4th of July, everybody. And thank you again for tuning in and being a part of Lickin' on Lending.
Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.